This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Evil Spy School by Stuart Gibbs. Read by Gibson Fraser.
August 30. Two. Regarding my covert field research has confirmed the worst. Spider definitely has a new diabolical plot underway, and they have started to staff it. Steps must be taken immediately to determine and given that the three of us are known to Spider, and thus unable to infiltrate their organization effectively, and that the CIA has certainly been compromised by enemy agents, we are left with no choice but to activate Benjamin Ripley for Operation Bedbug. The mission is unsanctioned and unapproved. It is not to be discussed with anyone, anywhere, no matter how much you think you can trust them. This is especially true for For his own safety, even young Mr. Ripley cannot be informed of what is truly going on until we are sure that If anyone has any doubts about Mr. Ripley's ability to serve in this capacity, now is the time to voice them. The consequences of his failure on this mission would be disastrous. Unless I hear from you, the mission will commence on September 3 at 1100 hours. God bless America.
Chapter 1. Heavy Artillery. Battle Zone. September 3, 1100 hours. I ran as fast as my legs could carry me. 7 enemy agents in hot pursuit. I had spent a great deal of time preparing for this moment. I had practiced self-defense. I had studied how to remain calm under pressure. I had read everything I could find on mortal combat. And so I had hoped that when the time came and I found myself in the thick of battle, I would be able to handle myself with cool, spy-like aplomb. Instead, I was screaming. Thankfully, it wasn't a girly shriek. It was more of a sustained, "Ah!" which could be roughly translated as, "I'm in serious trouble. Someone please help me." It's one thing to study action sequences. It's a whole other thing to find yourself in the middle of one. I dodged through piles of dirt and debris, aware the agents were gaining on me. They were all screaming too, although this was more of a war cry. Translation, "Once we catch you, you're dead meat." I was dressed for combat, clad from head to toe in camouflage gear. But it obviously wasn't working, because the enemy could see me perfectly well. Sniper fire whistled past me. Something screeched through the air high above and exploded in the distance. Not far ahead, a foxhole came into view. To most people, it would have looked like just a big, grubby hole in the dirt, but to me, it was beautiful. I shouted into my radio headset, "Erica, I'm coming in hot!" "Okay," Erica replied calmly. "I'm ready." She didn't sound like she was in the heat of battle at all. Instead, she sounded bizarrely relaxed, as though she were lounging in a hammock at a beach resort. I leapt into the foxhole. It was 4 feet deep. Erica Hale sat inside, leaning against the dirt wall, casually leafing through a Guns and Ammo magazine despite all the chaos around her. Like me, she was wearing camouflage gear, but somehow she looked stylish in hers. Then again, Erica would have looked stylish in a potato sack. She was the most beautiful girl I'd ever met, as well as the smartest, the most athletic, and the deadliest. "There's a horde of enemy agents right behind me," I panted. "Heavily armed. They ambushed me as I was nearing the objective."
"Ben, take it easy," Erica calmly tucked the magazine into her knapsack. "What are you so worked up about?"
"They're going to be here any second," I exclaimed, "and they're ruthless."
"They're 12 years old," Erica said flatly. She had a good point. They were only 12, and the war around us was merely a combat simulation. We were in the midst of our traditional survival and combat skills assessment exam at the CIA's Academy of Espionage. Our weapons were only paintball guns, and the battlefield was a mock-up on the Academy firing range. But it felt real enough.
"Some of them are pretty big 12-year-olds," I said defensively.
Their war cry was growing louder. They were almost upon us.
"How many of them are there?" Erica asked. 7. In one fluid movement, Erica sprang to her feet and fired her paintball gun over the lip of the foxhole. 5 shots, each punctuated by the yelp of someone being hit squarely by a paint-filled projectile. Erica took cover, grinning. Now there's only 2, she informed me. If there was anyone you wanted in your foxhole, it was Erica Hale. Although she was only 15, she was easily the most talented spy in training at school. She'd practically been preparing for it since birth. Spying was her family business. Most of her ancestors had been spies, going all the way back to Nathan Hale in the Revolutionary War. Her grandfather, Cyrus Hale, was one of the best there'd ever been, and he'd taught Erica almost everything he knew. On the other hand, I came from a long line of grocers. I was only 13, and until 7 months earlier, my entire espionage experience had consisted of watching James Bond movies. Since then, however, I'd twice been involved in thwarting the plots of Spider, a secretive subversive organization dedicated to causing chaos and mayhem. Thus I'd seen far more action than most of my fellow students. But that didn't mean I was comfortable in the heat of battle, be it real or pretend. Today was a good example. It was our first day back at school for the fall semester, time for the annual survival and combat skills assessment. When I was inducted, it was the middle of the school year, so my SAXA had been a solo exam. But now the school administration had to assess the entire first-year class and reassess all the returning students at the same time. There were 6 grades, 7th through 12th, with 50 kids in each. 300 people. Thus the full-scale fake battle. The school had been divided into 2 teams. Red, them, and blue, us. Each was assigned to steal a heavily guarded objective from the other side while protecting their own. It was basically an enormous, potentially painful version of Capture the Flag. Since it was only a game, and the kids who'd been chasing me were all newbies, I probably should have been as calm as Erica. But I wasn't. I was still on edge, terrified of screwing up in front of the professors, who were watching closely from the sidelines and grading our performance. "Did you only have 5 paintballs in your ammo clip?" I asked Erica. "No," she replied. "I have plenty." "Then why didn't you take out all 7 enemy agents?" Erica shrugged. "What fun would that be?" With a primal scream, the 2 remaining newbies leapt into our foxhole, guns primed, ready to paint us cherry red. One of them was staggeringly large for a boy his age. He was built like a sequoia tree. The other was a surprisingly small girl. She looked like a heavily armed elf. Thankfully, Erica took the guy. Before he could get a shot off, she'd launched herself into action, sweeping his legs out from under him and wrenching his gun away. Then she dispatched him with a shot to the chest, coating his torso in blue paint. I attacked the girl. Felt a bit mean to attack an elf, but this one was aiming a gun at me. I wasn't as adept as Erica, but my fighting skills had improved at school. Before I'd arrived, I wouldn't have been able to beat a small girl in a fight. Now I could. It wasn't very chivalrous, but my grade was on the line. I shoved the elf's gun aside as she fired. The paintball whizzed past me, leaving a red splotch on the side of the foxhole. Then I barreled into her, knocking her flat as I snapped the gun from her grasp. I swung it around, preparing to blast her. Only the elf started crying. "Stop!" she wailed. "I quit!" "You quit?" I asked, thrown. I don't think you can do that." "I thought I could hack it here, but I was wrong," the elf sobbed. "It's too hard. I want to go home. I want my mommy." I lowered the gun, feeling bad for how hard I'd knocked her down. "Sorry. Spy school's not for everyone." "Like you?" The elf's crying suddenly stopped. The whole "I want my mommy" thing had been an act. I tried to shoot her, but she lashed out a leg, catching me behind the knee. I crashed to the ground, the gun tumbling from my grasp. The elf pounced on it and swung the barrel toward me. Erica blew her away. She fired 6 times, coating the elf in blue, then pointed to the sidelines. "Nice try, newbie, but you're out." The elf now looked like a smurf, a really angry one. "You got lucky this time," she sneered at me. "Next time, your girlfriend might not be around to save you." Then she stormed off toward the morgue on the sidelines, where her fellow paint-splattered corpses watched the battle play out. "I'm not his girlfriend," Erica yelled after her. I staggered back to my feet, brushing myself off. Man, that girl was devious. She was, Erica agreed. She'll do well here. I watched the elf trudge past the reviewing stands. Professor Kuklinski, who taught advanced biochemical weaponry, appeared disappointed in her performance, while Professor Greenwald Smith, who taught counterespionage, seemed to be giving her some words of encouragement. Next to them, Professor Crandall, who taught self-preservation, had dozed off in his chair.
"You know," I said to Erica, "when normal kids go back to school, their first day is all about getting oriented and meeting their teachers. There's no paint guns or fighting or pretending to kill one another."
"Really?" Erica asked. "It must suck to be normal." I pried a clod of dirt from my ear, then scoped out the battlefield around us. I'd probably better get back in the game before I get dinged for slacking off.
"Hold on," Erica said. "How'd you end up with all those newbies after you in the first place?"
"Chip and Jawa set up an ambush for me. I thought I had a chance at the objective, but it was a trap."
"You're sure it was their doing?"
"Definitely. I saw them sick the newbies on me." Although they were on the opposing team, Chip Schachter and Jawaharlal O'Shea were two of my closest friends at spy school. Jawa was extremely smart. Chip was extremely sneaky and underhanded. Together, they made a formidable combination.
"They didn't come after you themselves?" Erica asked.
"They probably knew you and I would be working together," I said.
"So let's work together to take them out."
Erica started sketching a plan in the dirt with the barrel of her paintball gun. She'd drawn only two lines when an emergency call came over my headset.
"Smokescreen, you out there? We need your help."
It was Zoe Zibel, another of my close friends, only she was on our team today. Zoe had christened me Smokescreen shortly after my recruitment because she had mistakenly believed that my initial incompetence was an act designed to catch my enemies off guard.
"No one could be that inept," she'd once explained. "I've seen turtles that could fight better."
Since then, I had gained a considerable amount of skill and savvy, but the nickname had stuck. I radioed back. "What's the situation?"
"Chameleon doesn't know how to work the mortar," Zoe reported.
"Yes, I do,"
shouted Warren Reeves, a.k.a. Chameleon, in the background. Warren was gifted at camouflage, but mediocre at just about everything else. The mortar was a new addition to the SAXA exams. The administration at spy school had decided it was time for us to learn how to use heavy artillery. I chanced a look out of the foxhole toward our mortar base, a makeshift bunker atop a slope at one end of the firing range. From what I knew, the mortar was an actual working cannon, only the ammunition had been altered. Instead of shells, it fired paint bombs big enough to take out a dozen people at once. There were several Red enemy agents between us and the base. Erica got on the radio with us.
"No dice. Smokescreen is assigned to target acquisition, not heavy artillery. You'll have to work this out yourselves."
"No can do, Ice Queen," Zoe replied. "The situation is dire."
"How dire?" I asked.
"Hold on," Zoe said. "You're about to see." A second later, I heard Warren yell, "Fire in the hole!" followed by a loud explosion. A paint bomb blasted out of the bunker. Only, I could immediately tell something was wrong. Instead of arcing toward the enemy base at the opposite end of the battlefield, the bomb soared almost straight up, then began screaming downward, right toward us.
"Take cover!"
Erica yelled. For once, I was already ahead of her. We threw ourselves into the protected side of the foxhole just as the bomb detonated on the ground above us. A wave of blue paint sailed over our heads and splattered the rest of the hole. I peered back out of the foxhole. The ground for 30 feet in every direction was a ring of blue. A third-year Red team member on her way to the morgue had caught the worst of it. She was now coated with paint.
"That's not cool," she howled. "I was already dead."
Several of our own team members had been hit as well. Most had been caught only in the arm or the leg, but that was enough to remove them from the game. They were all shouting things at our mortar base that would have gotten them detention at a normal school. I got back on the radio.
"You guys nearly killed us just now."
"Sorry," Warren said. "My bad."
Erica took in the carnage and sighed.
"All right," she radioed. "I'm bringing Smokescreen in."
"Even though it's not our assignment?" I asked.
Erica usually wasn't one to defy orders, not when her perfect grade point average was on the line.
"It's a calculated risk. If we leave those two cheeseheads in charge of the mortar, we may not have a team much longer. Stay close to me."
With that, Erica grabbed her knapsack, sprang out of the foxhole, and raced toward base. I did exactly as she'd ordered. En route to the base, several opposing team members made the mistake of attacking us. Erica thwarted them so easily, she almost looked bored. I actually caught her yawning while she knocked one enemy agent unconscious. A few opponents who were older students, and thus familiar with Erica's reputation, didn't even bother to attack. Instead, they simply dropped their weapons and surrendered. This wasn't going to earn them a lot of points on their exam, but it was far less painful than having Erica take them out. Even though I should have been covering our backs, I couldn't help but watch Erica. In the first place, she could probably cover our backs better than I could, even while being attacked from the front. And second, Erica in action was a thing of beauty. It was like watching a prima ballerina perform Swan Lake, only with a lot more screaming. I already had a tremendous crush on Erica, and somehow, watching her wipe out a field full of enemies made her even more alluring. I was sure Erica knew about my crush. After all, she was our finest spy in training. Keeping a secret from her was like trying to hide meat from a dog. Erica had never let on the slightest bit, but then, human interaction wasn't her strong suit. She barely deigned to speak to anyone else at school, including our professors, so I knew not to expect too much. Frankly, I was thrilled that she had been willing to team up with me. Erica calmly took out the last two opponents as we arrived at our mortar base, leaving them whimpering in pain. We clambered over the bunker wall only to have Zoe nearly blast us away.
"It's us, you nitwit!" Erica yelled.
"Sorry."
Zoe apologized, holstering her gun. It didn't take long to scope out the bunker, as it was only a few feet across. The mortar sat in the center next to a pile of artillery. It was smaller than I'd expected, like a sawed-off cannon. Warren stood beside it, frantically flipping through the instruction manual. Zoe hugged me with relief.
"Thank goodness you're here."
Warren glowered jealously, as he always did whenever Zoe showed me any affection.
"What's the problem?" I asked.
"We're trying to take out the enemy mortar base, but we can't get the targeting right," Zoe reported.
"We'll handle it," Erica said, then pointed to Zoe and ordered, "Stay on guard." Then she pointed to me and ordered, "Work out the trajectory." Then she pointed to Warren and ordered, "Move, you're in my space." Warren scurried out of Erica's path, meekly holding out the instruction manual.
"Do you need this?"
Erica rolled her eyes.
"Please, I've known how to operate a mortar since I was in preschool."
With most people, this would have been an exaggeration. With Erica, it probably wasn't. Her father had once showed me a baby picture of her playing with nunchucks. Erica instantly began making adjustments to the cannon. I turned to Warren and grinned confidently. It was now my time to shine. I might not have been as great a warrior as Erica, but when it came to math, no one else at spy school could hold a candle to me. I had level 16 skills, which meant I could do extremely complex computations in my head and never forgot a phone number. At normal school, this was the kind of thing that not only failed to impress my fellow students, but often got me shaken down for my lunch money. At the Academy of Espionage, however, there were sometimes occasions, such as aiming a mortar, where being good at calculus made you kind of cool.
"How far is the enemy base?" I asked.
165 meters, Warren replied.
"Charge?"
200 pounds of thrust.
"Weight of the shell?"
Warren frowned.
"Is that important?"
"Only if you actually want to take out the enemy rather than our own team," Erica muttered. Then she told me, "Standard shell weighs 16 pounds.
"Wind speed?" I asked.
15 miles an hour, Zoe reported, "coming directly from the southwest."
I took a second to make my mental calculations, then another second to double-check my work.
"We need a launch angle of 73 degrees, aiming 6 degrees right at the target."
"Roger,"
Erica started orienting the mortar.
"Nice work," Zoe told me. "Thanks for bailing us out, Smokescreen."
"We don't know if he's right yet," Warren muttered sullenly.
"Of course he is," Zoe shot back. "I'd trust Smokescreen before my own calculator."
I started for the pile of ammunition, but Warren leapt into my path.
"I'll handle that," he snapped. "Firing this is my job."
I stepped back, knowing Warren was desperate to prove his worth. While he grabbed a paint bomb, I jammed in some earplugs and borrowed Zoe's binoculars to scan our surroundings. Below us, the battlefield was laid out in an oddly perfect rectangle. At the edges, the dirt and debris stopped abruptly, and the green lawns of campus began. It was like a little slice of Beirut had been dropped in the middle of Washington, D.C. Behind me, the Gothic buildings of the academy ringed the north end of the battlefield, dominated by the 5-story Nathan Hale Administration Building. For a mile on each side around us was untouched forest, providing plenty of land for our normal war games, as well as a barrier between us and the outside world, which swallowed up the sounds of battle. The academy's official reason for existence was a highly guarded secret, so the campus had its own secret identity. St. Smithin's Science Academy for Boys and Girls. The reviewing stand sat on the western side of the field. Beside them, the students who had been killed were gathered, rooting on their respective teams. Since most of the corpses were now colored blue or red, they had the look of game pieces gathered along the edge of a risk board. There were a lot more blue-splattered corpses than red ones, which meant our team was winning. This was mostly due to Erica, who had more kills than everyone else on our team put together. However, Chip and Jawa were currently leading the remaining Reds in an assault on our flag, aided by their own mortar, which their team was doing a decent job of operating. As I watched, a red paint bomb detonated only a few feet from our flag, taking out half of our defenders. Erica observed this too. "Are you sure you're right, Ben?" she asked. "If we don't take out their mortar with this shot, they'll win with their next blast." I was sure, but I rechecked my math one last time, not wanting to make a fool of myself in front of Erica. "It'll work," I assured her. "All right." Erica stepped away from the mortar and joined Zoe and me at the edge of the base. Rather than watch Warren set off the mortar, she lifted her paintball gun to her shoulder and began picking off the red team members swarming toward our flag.
"Stand back," Warren warned us, clutching the remote trigger. "Detonation in 5 seconds. 4.
Erica suddenly stopped shooting, concerned. She spun back toward the mortar, sniffing the air.
"What's wrong?" I asked.
"That idiot put a live round in there," Erica cried, springing at Warren.
I leapt into action as well. There was no time to ask Erica how she'd determined Warren had screwed up. Knowing her, she could smell the difference between a live munition and a fake one. The fact was, I'd calculated the right trajectory, meaning the mortar was about to reduce several of my fellow students to tiny pieces. Thankfully, before Warren could fire, Erica slammed into him, knocking him flat. Unfortunately, Warren interpreted this attack as some sort of spy school trick.
"Help!" he squawked, struggling for control of the trigger. "She's a double agent for the red team!"
In Warren's defense, this was exactly the sort of ruse the faculty at spy school played all the time. If it had been anyone but Erica, I might have doubted her intentions as well. I left Erica to handle Warren and turned my attention to the mortar itself. The cannon sat on a rotating platform. I pulled the pin that locked it into place, then threw my shoulder into the barrel. It spun more easily than I'd expected, swiveling quickly away from me. Just as Warren wrenched the trigger away from Erica and depressed it.
"Fire!"
he screamed triumphantly, and only then bothered to check to see where the cannon was aimed. The mortar roared. It was so loud that even with my earplugs in, I felt as though my brains might vibrate out of my head. The shell exploded out of the barrel, arcing into the air away from the battlefield, and right toward the Nathan Hale building. The entire war zone immediately fell silent. Every student and faculty member stopped what they were doing to watch the disaster unfold. The bomb peaked several hundred feet in the air and then whistled downward, slamming into the Hale building's roof directly above the principal's office. Erica had been right. It wasn't a paint bomb. It was a live round. The explosion blasted a huge chunk out of the building. Brick and tile flew through the air. A gargoyle rocketed across Hammond Quadrangle and embedded in the wall of the armory. When the smoke cleared, there was a divot 30 feet across right where the principal's office had been. I cringed and looked to Erica. What's the chance that the principal was up there?
Well, he's supposed to be down here in the reviewing stands, Erica said. But the chances of the principal being in the right place at the right time aren't usually very good.
A howl of rage suddenly echoed from the blast site. I raised the binoculars and saw the principal stagger out of the remains of his office bathroom. His clothes were charred black and the toilet seat was around his neck, but he appeared to be all right. Enraged, but all right.
"Who is responsible for this?" he bellowed. "Find them and bring them to me."
Zoe and Erica looked at me with genuine concern in their eyes. Warren, however, couldn't hide his glee.
"Ooh," he taunted. "Ben, you're in trouble."
And for once, I knew Warren was actually right.
Chapter 2. Expulsion. CIA Academy of Espionage, Nathan Hale Administration Building, September 3, 11:45 hours. 10 minutes later, I was in the principal's office, or at least what was left of it. It probably wasn't the best idea to be in a fifth-story room that had just suffered severe structural damage, but the principal, who didn't think clearly on normal occasions, was so enraged that he'd apparently ceased thinking at all. I'd seen him angry plenty of times before.
not to mention confused, baffled, perplexed, dumbfounded, and completely flummoxed, but those were mere drizzles of irritation compared to the thunderstorm of fury he was experiencing now. He was so determined to unleash his wrath on me that he hadn't even changed out of his scorched clothes. Bits of his tie and sports jacket were still smoldering, leaving tiny contrails of smoke as he paced around the remains of the office. His toupee had been fried black and looked like an overdone steak perched atop his head. But then, the principal's toupee was normally so awful, this was actually an improvement.
"Look at this room," the principal shrieked. "Look what you did to it. Do you see what you've done to my desk?"
No, I said. "Your desk isn't there anymore." Instead, where the desk had been, there was only blue sky and a massive hole in the floor leading to the Dean of Chemical Warfare's office below.
"Exactly!"
the principal screamed. "That desk was an extremely important piece of espionage history. It was first used by Sidney Grimble, the founder of this academy, and it has been used by every principal since. It was a priceless artifact, and you blew it to pieces."
"I'm sorry."
"I should say you're sorry. If it hadn't been for my keen ears and my lightning reflexes, I would have been killed."
This was a lie. Since I'd seen the principal emerging from his bathroom after the blast, I knew that he'd literally been caught with his pants down. It was only sheer luck that he'd been seated on the toilet rather than at his desk when the bomb struck. It might be surprising that even though the principal worked in intelligence, he wasn't actually that intelligent himself, or that, of all people, he'd been the one selected to run a school. But the fact was, no one joined the CIA to become a principal. It was a job no one wanted, and therefore a dumping ground for agents no one wanted. Most other organizations would have just fired an incompetent employee. But the CIA was run by the government, where incompetent people didn't merely avoid being fired, they were often elected to high offices.
"I wasn't trying to hit your office," I explained. "I was trying to prevent some students from getting blown up."
The principal paused for a moment, as though weighing whether saving a few students' lives was worth the loss of his desk.
"Why were you even firing live ammunition during a fake battle in the first place?"
"I wasn't. Another student loaded the cannon."
"It's not very professional to shirk responsibility," the principal scoffed.
This from a man who'd swiped the dessert from his secretary's lunch bag for a year and then tried to pin it on the janitorial staff.
"I'm not shirking anything," I argued. "I'm telling you the truth.
Warren Reeves was in charge of the mortar. Erica Hale and I were helping him, or trying to. Warren insisted he could load and fire the mortar by himself, but he put a live shell in rather than a paint bomb."
"How?"
"I have no idea. You had me brought up here before I had a chance to find out." Less than 2 minutes after the misfire, two very big men from campus security had arrived at the mortar base and demanded I accompany them to the principal's office. Erica was the one who realized the ammo was live.
"And yet I noticed that she didn't blow up my office."
"She was trying to stop the trigger man.
While she handled that, I reoriented the mortar from the other students."
"And you aimed it at a building instead? Because the whole point of buildings is that they generally have people inside of them."
"Not today," I protested. "This building was supposed to be empty. The SACSA exams were mandatory for all students and faculty."
"What idiot said that?"
You did?" The principal was already crimson with anger, but now he shifted into a color of red I hadn't known humans could be, a kind of blazing, molten magma red. Before he could explode at me, I reached into my pocket and pulled out the letter that had been sent to my home at the end of the summer, the one stating that attendance at the SACSA exams on the first day of school was mandatory for all students and faculty. It was signed by the principal himself.
"You see?" I asked, holding it up.
The principal froze, mouth agape, a half second from reading me the riot act. He was so red already, I couldn't tell if he was embarrassed or angry at me for revealing that he'd messed up. I could almost hear the wheels in his brain turning as he tried to figure out what to do next. Finally, he said,
"You're expelled from school."
"What?" I gasped. "Why?"
"Because you blew up my office."
The principal waved a hand at the space where his wall had been.
"You honestly think I'd let you stay here after a screw-up like this?"
"But it wasn't my fault."
"You just admitted that you aimed the cannon here."
"There were people in danger," I protested. "I had to do something."
"Well, you should have done something else," the principal countered.
"Like what?"
"I don't know, something that didn't involve nearly killing me while I was on the toilet."
The principal caught his mistake, then desperately tried to backpedal.
"I mean, something that could have killed me while I was on the toilet, had I been there.
Which I wasn't. I was here, in my office, doing important things, and then cleverly took cover in the bathroom when I heard the incoming mortar round. The point being, your behavior was rash and poorly thought out.
There was no time to think.
That's never stopped me, the principal snapped. I rarely take any time to think at all, and yet you don't see me blowing up people's offices.
With most people, I would have chalked a statement like that up to them being too angry to get their thoughts straight. But the principal's thoughts were usually more jumbled than a plate of linguine. So, I said, if I had just stood there and let those other students get killed, then I wouldn't be getting expelled right now? The principal mulled that over, then completely dodged the question.
Look, I'm not in favor of killing students. In fact, I'm against it. But we are training people to be spies here, and when you're a spy, there are many instances where life hangs in the balance. The CIA needs people who can handle those situations, people who won't crack under pressure, people who can save lives without nearly killing other people.
I've done that, I said sullenly. In fact, I've done it twice. I defeated the plans of Spider 2 times.
Spider? The principal asked blankly.
The evil organization that tried to blow up this school a few months ago, I reminded him.
Only I thwarted them, saving dozens of lives, including yours. And then I thwarted them again last summer, saving even more people, including the President of the United States.
In fact, I'm the only student at this school who has done anything like that. And you're expelling me? Because I blew up your stupid office?
It probably wasn't the best tone to take with the principal, but I was upset and angry and already expelled, so it wasn't as though I could get into more trouble.
This isn't because you blew up my office, the principal said defensively. It's because you nearly killed me. You might have defeated Spider, but you are also reckless, dangerous, and insubordinate. There is no place at this school for students like you. Therefore, you are officially dismissed from the Academy of Espionage. Go clean out your dorm room. Security will escort you off campus.
With that, the principal turned his back on me, signaling that our conversation was over. Normally, he would have turned his attention to something on his desk, but now he realized he had no desk, or much of anything else left in his office. So he simply stood there, unsure what else to do, while waiting for me to leave. I was heading for the door when the principal spoke again.
There's one more thing.
Yes?
We are taking a very big risk by turning you loose into normal society. Even though you are no longer welcome at this academy, it is still imperative that you keep its existence a secret. If you tell anyone of its true nature, or that you were ever training to be a spy at all, there will be consequences.
Go jump in a lake, I said. It wasn't like he could expel me again. Then I walked out the door. Behind me, I could hear the principal screaming something else in rage, but I tuned him out. I walked away down the long, dark corridor of offices. This part of the building had withstood the blast quite well. There were a few new cracks in the walls, and most of the portraits of famous spies were now a bit crooked. But other than that, everything looked just the way it always did. As I passed the last office, Alexander Hale exited it, holding a cardboard box. He froze upon seeing me, looking embarrassed and unsure what to do. Alexander was Erica's father. When I'd first met him, on the day he'd recruited me to spy school, he'd been the most decorated agent of his generation, suave, dashing, and debonair. However, I'd soon learned that Alexander was a fraud. In truth, he was a lousy spy who'd based his entire career on stealing the credit from others, and he'd made several critical mistakes that had severely jeopardized our missions. After Erica and I mentioned these in our debriefings, Alexander's career had taken a nasty hit. He'd been stripped of his medals and commendations and fired from the agency. I hadn't seen him since. Now it appeared he'd returned to clear out his office. He looked like a mere shell of the man he'd been before. His normally pristine suit was rumpled, his shirt was untucked, and there was a mustard stain on his tie. He had a week's growth of beard on his chin and a great deal of sadness in his eyes.
"Hello, Benjamin," Alexander said meekly. "How's your first day of school so far?"
"Not so good," I told him. "I just got expelled." Alexander's eyes widened in surprise.
"For what?"
"I sort of blew up the principal's office."
"Oh, so that's what that loud boom was."
I nodded. "Yes, he just kicked me out." The old Alexander Hale might have volunteered to go to bat for me, or at least pretend that he was going to. Instead, he sighed. "We all fall from grace sooner or later, don't we?" I would have preferred later. I noticed what was inside the box Alexander was carrying. Office supplies. And then I realized that the office Alexander had been exiting wasn't his.
It belonged to Nathan Kagan, the Dean of Survival Skills. Is all that stuff yours?
Kind of.
It was suddenly evident that Alexander hadn't been embarrassed about running into me. He'd been embarrassed because I'd caught him swiping office supplies.
Kagan filched plenty from me over the years. I can't even count how many bullets I lent him. But was he there when I needed someone to stand up for me? No, he threw me to the wolves. So, at the very least, he owes me a stapler.
He grinned at me weakly.
I really should go. If anyone asks, you never saw me.
Alexander ducked away before I could say another word, probably intending to use one of the secret exits off the campus to avoid running into anyone else. I headed down the main staircase to the first floor, where there was a big open lobby, the grand entrance to the Hale building. My friends were gathered there. It was a good-sized crowd with Zoe, Jawa, and Chip at the front. I spotted Warren as well, lurking off to the side.
I can't believe they're booting you for this, Zoe said, and everyone echoed the thought.
How'd you even know? I asked. The principal just told me.
We're studying to be spies, Jawa explained. It's our job to know things.
I nodded, realizing I should have expected that.
You want to get even with the principal? Chip asked.
I'd be happy to handle that for you. Just say the word and his car ends up in the Potomac River.
Thanks for the offer, I said, but I'll pass.
How about his cat, then? Chip asked. I could do something bad to his cat.
Chip, Zoe gasped.
I don't mean kill it, Chip told her. I mean shave it or something, to send a message to the principal that you don't mess with our friends.
In truth, I would have loved my friends to get even with the principal. After all, the man had just dashed all my hopes and dreams. When I'd first arrived at the academy, I had desperately wanted to become a great spy, but had feared I might not be qualified. But now, after several months of school and camp, not to mention two successful confrontations with Spider, I really felt I had what it took. And now I was being dumped back into the real world. The principal wasn't tossing me for any real reason, he was just being petty, and I hated him for it. And yet it seemed that having my friends prank him in response was equally petty. Plus there were cameras everywhere at spy school. If I asked anyone to do anything illegal, it'd be recorded.
There is something I'd like you all to do to the principal, I said.
Really? Chip asked, excited.
What?
Tell him he's making a mistake. Chip frowned, deflated.
You mean like write a petition or something?
Yes.
We could do that, Zoe proclaimed eagerly. And we could send it to the top brass at the CIA, too. They should know they're losing one of their best spies to be for a dumb reason. If anyone should have been booted for this, it's Warren.
Lots of people seconded this.
Hey, Warren cried, this isn't my fault.
You loaded the mortar, Zoe said pointedly.
There were only supposed to be paint bombs in the ammo pile, Warren replied. I'm not the idiot who put a live shell in there with them.
But you are the idiot who didn't notice the difference, Chip told him.
They looked exactly the same, Warren cried.
They shouldn't have, Jawa chided. A paint bomb and a shell are nothing alike.
These were, Warren snapped. I swear, any one of you would have made the same mistake.
Well, we didn't, Zoe said. You did. And now Smokescreen's getting sacked because of it.
Warren cringed, looking wounded. Everyone on campus knew that he carried a serious torch for Zoe. Except Zoe. I almost felt bad for the kid. Not quite, but almost.
Now that I thought about it, something seemed wrong about the whole mortar incident. I tried to place what it was, but before I could, a hush fell over the room.
Erica had arrived. I hadn't seen her come in, but that wasn't unusual. Erica had a way of seeming to suddenly materialize. One moment she wasn't there, and the next she was. The crowd parted like the Red Sea, allowing her to pass through it. Erica didn't look at anyone else as she passed them. She kept her eyes locked on me until we were face to face. I expected that she was there for moral support, like everyone else. She was going to tell me that the administration was doing the wrong thing. She was going to admit that she'd really miss me. Maybe she'd even show a rare spark of emotion and hug me goodbye. But she didn't. Instead, she said,
"You really screwed up."
"Me?" I asked, surprised.
"Don't you mean the principal?"
"No."
Erica's gaze remained steely and cold. "You cracked under pressure and made a huge mistake. Yes, you saved some people, but in doing so, you nearly killed someone else and did serious damage to this building. Who knows what might have happened if you'd behaved like this on a real mission?"
"But you've been with me on a real mission," I protested, and I didn't screw up then."
"That's not exactly true," Erica said. "In fact, you made plenty of mistakes."
"Like what?"
"Accidentally alerting potential suspects that you were spying on them? Getting captured by the enemy? Allowing yourself to be led into an ambush?"
All of those weren't entirely my fault. And refusing to accept responsibility for your failures. Now, I chalked some of that up to you being young and naive, hoping you'd get better. But today's events proved me wrong. I'm sorry, Ben, but it doesn't look like you have what it takes to be a spy.
Erica couldn't have hurt me more if she'd punched me in the face. And to make matters worse, she'd done it in front of my friends. I gaped at her, trying to figure out what to say, but no words would come. I felt completely empty inside.
Take my advice, Erica said. The next time someone comes to you with an offer to change your life, accept it, and then try not to mess it up like you did this time.
She spun on her heel and started back through the crowd. Everyone else looked as shocked as I felt.
All of you know the rules, Erica told them. After today, in order to protect the secrecy of this institution, none of you can have any more contact with Ben. Anyone who violates that directive will suffer the same fate as he did. As far as this school is concerned, Agent Benjamin Ripley no longer exists.
Then she melted into the crowd and vanished from sight. Chapter 3. Civilian Life. Robert E. Lee Junior High, September 4, 1200 hours. I didn't think it was possible to feel worse than I did after being expelled from spy school, but I was wrong. Less than 24 hours later, I found myself in one of the most horrible places I could have ever imagined. Middle school. After packing up my belongings in my dorm room, I had taken a cab to my parents' home in Vienna, Virginia. Spy school had already established a cover story for my return. Due to some unforeseen cutbacks, St. Smithin's Science Academy could no longer afford my scholarship. My parents were at once upset by this news and thrilled to have me home. Mom had quickly whipped up a celebratory welcome-back dinner, while Dad had done his best to assure me that it wouldn't be so bad to return to my old life. The next morning, they re-enrolled me at my old middle school. It wasn't difficult, as the school year had begun only the day before. I wasn't very happy about this. Although spy school had been extremely challenging, and people had occasionally tried to kill me there, it had still been significantly more enjoyable than middle school. Junior high was mind-numbingly dull, socially distressing, and potentially dangerous as well. It was common to be threatened with physical harm by the roving gangs of bullies there. In addition, the cafeteria food was toxic, the bathrooms were putrid, and many of the teachers were dumber than dirt. For example, Mr. Godfrey, my American history teacher, who hadn't known when the War of 1812 took place. As far as I was concerned, there was only one good thing about middle school. My best friend Mike Brzezinski was there, too. Mike and I had met in first grade and been friends ever since, even though we'd grown into very different people. I worked hard and studied hard. Mike didn't. In fact, he tried to get away with doing as little as possible. Things always worked out for him, though. He was popular, happy, and dating Elizabeth Pasternak, the most beautiful girl in school. "It's good to have you back, buddy," he told me at lunch the first day. I poked at the grayish slab of meat I'd gotten in the hot lunch line, checking it for insect parts or stray cafeteria lady hairs. "It's good to be back," I agreed, doing my best to sell the lie. Mike saw right through this. "I know you're bummed that you can't go to that science school anymore, but trust me, it's way better here." "I already went to this school," I reminded him. "It sucked." "More than science school? Please. What do you do there for fun, dissect worms?" "Not exactly," I said. If there was anyone I wished I could tell the truth about spy school, it was Mike. Throughout our lives, he'd been the cool kid while I'd been the dork, and now I'd fought bad guys, been in death-defying action sequences, and saved the life of the President of the United States. And Mike still thought I was a dork. "I'll tell you why this is better," Mike said. "We have girls here." I took a tentative bite of my mystery meat, then spit it right back out again. It tasted as though it had gone bad several months earlier. "There were girls at St. Smithin's." "I mean attractive girls, not science girls." "They were attractive. You saw Erica." Mike paused, then nodded agreement. "True. Erica was smoking hot, but you're not seeing her anymore." I frowned. I'd never really been seeing Erica. Mike had once spotted us together and mistakenly assumed we were dating, and I hadn't exactly tried to convince him that wasn't true. It was the one time in my life he'd actually seemed jealous of me. However, since I was barred from ever seeing Erica again for security reasons, and had to claim things were over between us. "You know how you get over losing a hot girlfriend?" Mike asked.
you get another hot girlfriend.
Just like that? I asked dubious.
Just like that, Mike said, like it was easy.
As if on cue, Elizabeth Pasternak arrived at our table with her best friends, Chloe Appel and Kate Grant. Back in sixth grade, I'd had crushes on all three of them. Although they paled next to Erica, I still felt my heart rev up when they sat with us. All of them seemed slightly annoyed that I was crashing their table. Elizabeth gave Mike a peck on the cheek.
Hey.
Hey, Mike said back. You all remember Ben, right?
Kind of, said Elizabeth.
Maybe, said Chloe.
No,
said Kate. I'd been in the same grade with all of them since kindergarten. Mike said, Ben just transferred back here from private school.
Really?
Chloe asked, trying to be nice.
What school?
I started to say St. Smith and Science Academy, but before I could, Mike said, You wouldn't have heard of it. It's top secret. The girls all perked up, intrigued.
Why was it secret? Chloe asked.
Because Ben was training to be a spy, Mike told them. I turned on Mike, worried, wondering if he really knew my secret or was simply trying to make me sound cool and had guessed the truth by accident.
Liar, said Kate. Then she looked at me. He's lying, right?
I couldn't believe I had to lie to the three hottest girls in the school about not having trained to be a spy, but I did it anyhow.
Yeah, he's lying.
I knew it,
Kate exclaimed. Well, come on, Mike said. You can't expect him to admit the truth, can you? The girls all took a moment to think about that.
I thought you were at some dorky science academy, Elizabeth said.
It was his cover, Mike told her. I tried to deny this, but before I could, Chloe asked,
If you were in spy school, what are you doing back here?
He's undercover, Mike said. He was surprisingly convincing. The girls all now looked intrigued.
It took everything I had to tell them. That's not true. I did go to a science academy. I was never training to be a spy.
Chloe said,
That's exactly what I'd expect someone who was training to be a spy to say.
I started to deny this, but Mike gripped my arm tightly and pulled me aside.
What are you doing? He whispered.
What are you doing? I shot back.
I'm trying to get you a new girlfriend.
By lying to them? I asked. Mike shrugged in a way that could have either meant, You know I'm not lying, or, So I'm lying, who cares? Then he told the girls, Sorry, Ben's upset at me for blowing his cover. Apparently, now that you know the truth about him, we're all in mortal danger, so we have to stop talking about this. Elizabeth and Chloe nodded in understanding. They didn't look concerned about being in mortal danger. They looked excited.
Kate fixed Mike with a skeptical glance. You're so full of garbage.
I couldn't believe the irony of my situation. The one person who thought Mike was lying was actually wrong, while the other girls who'd been theoretically misled now believed the truth. It was so screwed up I could barely keep track of right and wrong. Before I could even begin to sort it out, though, someone grabbed me by the collar from behind, dragging me away from the table and hoisting me to my feet. It was Dirk Dennett, otherwise known as Dirk the Jerk. Dirk wasn't the toughest bully we had at our school, but he made up for that by being the meanest. Before I'd gone to spy school, he'd made my life miserable every chance he got. Now that I was back, he seemed eager to make up for lost time.
I heard you got kicked out of your science school, he taunted.
No, I stammered. I lost my scholarship. Mike was suddenly on his feet beside me. Leave him alone, Dirk. Dirk didn't take his eyes off me.
Why do you insist on hanging out with this loser, Brzezinski?
Because it's better than hanging out with a jerk like you, Mike shot back. Now let him go. Elizabeth, Chloe, and Kate all cooed, impressed by Mike's chivalry. Dirk shifted his attention to Mike, but kept a vice grip on my collar.
You gonna make me?
Mike wasn't really a fighter. He tended to get by on charm. He sized Dirk up, a bit daunted, but then stood up for me anyhow.
I might.
Dirk shoved me aside and clenched his fists. Mike, I said quickly, you don't have to do this.
Yes, I do, Mike replied. I'm not letting this bozo ruin your first day back.
Without warning, Dirk suddenly took a swing at Mike. Only something caught his fist en route. To my surprise, it was me. I'd learned some things over the past few months at spy school. For starters, I wasn't completely helpless when it came to self-preservation. I'd hoped to keep all that a secret, given the official directive I'd received to not reveal anything about my training. But the instant I saw Mike in jeopardy, for trying to help me, no less, my instincts had taken over. Dirk seemed even more surprised that I'd caught his fist than I was. Then he turned on me and attacked. Right up until that point, I had never considered myself a good fighter. I'd been one of the worst at spy school. But then, I'd been measuring myself against other spies to be,
many of whom had been studying martial arts since preschool. I never fought a normal person before. In truth, even a bully like Dirk didn't fight that much. He merely threatened smaller kids and hoped they'd fork over their lunch money. Or he sucker-punched them and put them out of commission before they even knew what was happening. The only reason he attacked me then was that, after all my years of letting him bully me, he was sure he'd win. He was wrong. Without even thinking about it, my training kicked in. First, I went with the sneaky cobra defense. I quickly sidestepped Dirk's punch and wrenched his arm behind him. He buckled at the knees and I slammed his face right into Chloe Appel's hot lunch. His face splatted in her mashed potatoes, flecking gravy onto her blouse. "Sorry," I said. "Don't worry about it," Chloe replied, then flashed me a coy smile. I twisted Dirk's arm a bit more, making him yelp in pain. "Are you going to behave now?" Dirk whimpered and nodded, which was hard to do with his face in the potatoes. "All right, then." I released my grip on him. Dirk immediately went back on his word and attacked again. He came up roaring, which might have been scarier if there hadn't been French-cut green beans jammed up his nose. Then he charged me, swinging his fists wildly. I quickly went with the angry monkey counterattack, spinning away, then delivering a quick elbow to the solar plexus. When Dirk doubled over, gasping for air, I gave him a good, quick thwack to the back of the neck, which laid him out for good on the cafeteria floor. The entire room erupted with cheers. Every single person, most of whom had been picked on by Dirk at some point, was applauding. Even the lunch ladies. Mike was grinning proudly, like a dad who just watched his son hit a home run. And Elizabeth Pasternak's friends seemed much more interested in me than they had before. "You expect us to believe you learned that in science school?" Chloe asked. "Karate's really just physics," I replied. "What are you going to do to the other three guys?" Kate said, excited. "What other three guys?" I asked. The girls pointed behind me. It was only now that I noticed Dirk had brought backup. Three guys, each considerably bigger than I was, were lurching toward me, cracking their knuckles. "Get him!" Dirk gasped from the floor, where he was still curled in the fetal position. "And make him pay!" I hadn't studied fighting three opponents at once yet. That was to be covered in Self-Preservation 102, which was a second-year class at spy school. Although I'd still learned one useful thing about this situation in SP 101. When severely outnumbered by the enemy, running away is always a good call. And so I went with the frightened rabbit defense and turned tail. The three thugs followed, knocking hapless students aside and sending lunch trays flying as they came after me. "Wait," Mike yelled to me, but there was no way I could do that. I barged out of the cafeteria and raced through the halls, which were now empty for lunchtime. I'd been hoping to outrun the bullies, but they were surprisingly fast for guys so big. They kept pace as I zigged and zagged through the halls. Then I rounded a corner expecting to find an exit ahead of me, and found a wall instead. Either there had been some new construction at school, or I hadn't remembered the layout right. Either way, I was at a dead end. I had no choice but to turn around and brace for the oncoming attack. Only, it never came. Around the corner, the sound of the three brutes storming down the hall toward me was interrupted by the sound of them all reacting with surprise, followed by the sounds of them getting thrashed in a fight. The muffled thuds of fists hitting flesh, the metallic clangs of heads caroming off lockers, the wet slaps of bodies landing hard on a linoleum floor. Then there was silence. I peered around the corner, wondering who had come to my rescue, expecting Mike, or perhaps Mike and a few other guys, or maybe even Erica, who'd reveal that she'd been keeping an eye on me out of habit. The three bullies were laid out, unconscious, and standing in the middle of them, brushing a bit of blood off his sleeve, was Joshua Halal. This was a considerable shock to me, as Joshua worked for Spider. Plus, the last time I'd seen him, he'd been plummeting to his death. He looked up and smiled politely, as though there was nothing insanely abnormal about his being there at all. "Hello, Ben," he said. "We need to talk. I have a proposition for you."
Chapter 4. Recruitment. Robert E. Lee Junior High, September 4, 12:45 hours.
"I thought you were dead," I said.
"I'm not," Joshua replied. "Surprise?" Although he was trying to be civil, there was a bitter edge to his voice, which made sense given that I was partly responsible for his plunge off a cliff. I had just thwarted Spider's plans, and Joshua had been trying to escape when he'd fallen to what I'd thought was his doom. Although he hadn't died,
He hadn't come out of it unscathed, either. In fact, he was extremely scathed. Joshua was only 18, and he'd been a student at spy school before defecting to Spider. Back then, he'd been renowned for his good looks, with piercing green eyes, a mane of dark hair, and flawless skin. Now his once handsome face was a maze of scars. In addition, or perhaps subtraction, he was missing an eye, covered by a patch, a hand, replaced by a high-tech hook, and a leg, now a robotic prosthetic. And yet he carried himself with grace and style, sporting designer clothes and a watch that probably cost more than my father's car. He looked like an extremely well-dressed pirate. "How'd you survive?" I asked. "I landed in a bog, or a marsh, something squishy. It broke my fall enough to spare my life." Joshua spoke with a clipped, somewhat snobbish accent that made him sound like he'd spent a lot of his life at a country club. That, combined with his battered body, made him seem older than he actually was. Spider's agents found me later, and the doctors did the best they could to fix me. Voices echoed through the school halls. It sounded like a lot of other students were coming our way, probably wanting to see what the bullies had done to me, or vice versa. I could hear Mike's voice among them, leading the pack. "I think they went this way. Come on!" "We need to go," Joshua told me. "I can't be seen here." "I'm not going anywhere with you," I said. Joshua produced a gun from his pocket. "Does this change your mind?" "Yes," I admitted. "It sure does." Joshua motioned me toward a classroom with the gun. "Move." I did as ordered and found myself in a chemistry class. Joshua came in behind me, locked the door, and then pointed to the window with his hook. "Open that." I did this too. We were only on the first floor, so it was easy to clamber out onto the school lawn. Through the door behind me, I could hear my fellow students discovering the trio of unconscious bullies in the hall. There were lots of gasps of surprise. "Holy cow," Mike whooped. "Ben wiped the floor with them." "You weren't kidding," Chloe gasped. "He was a spy." "Is he dating anyone?" Kate asked. Joshua slipped out the window with surprising grace for a man missing half his limbs. A gray sedan idled nearby, a man in sunglasses in the driver's seat. "Get in," Joshua demanded. There was no one else outside the school, no one else I could signal to for help, and while I could outrun bullies, I couldn't outrun a bullet, so I got in the car. There was a thick glass partition between us and the front seat, like in a taxi cab. It was soundproof, so the driver couldn't hear us. The back seat was spacious and comfortable. There was a small cooler with some drinks on ice for us. It might have all been very pleasant if I wasn't being forced to be there against my will. Joshua climbed in, keeping the gun trained on me. The car started moving before I even had my seatbelt fastened. "It's good to see you again, Ben," Joshua said. "You look like you've kept yourself in good shape." "Thanks." Seeing as he had a gun, I tried to be polite. "You look, well, not good exactly, but I think the word you're looking for is terrible." I frowned. "Did all that happen in the fall?" "Most of it. I lost the arm and the leg, but not the eye."
"Oh, how'd you lose that?"
"A bug flew into it."
You don't lose your eye if a bug flies into it."
"You do if it's your first day with the hook." I winced. I almost apologized, but then it occurred to me that I hadn't directly caused Joshua's misfortune. All I'd done was defeat his evil plans. The damage he'd experienced as a result was all due to his own actions as he tried to escape.
"So," I said, "what's this proposition?"
"You're a smart kid. You can't figure it out?" There was only one reason I could think of that I was still alive. "You want me to come work for Spider?" Joshua smiled. "Yes."
"You guys have already made me this offer," I said. "Twice."
"I know. And you've rejected us twice. Not to mention thwarting our plans twice, causing us considerable embarrassment and costing us a great deal of money. But we don't see that as a problem. When the New York Yankees get repeatedly shut out by a great pitcher, they don't hate the pitcher. Instead, they try to recruit him. This isn't baseball."
"True.
So what makes you think I'm going to accept this time?" "The way spy school treated you, for starters. You're one of the finest students they've produced in years. Not just anyone could have undone our plans. And how do they repay you? With expulsion. I assure you, we would never treat you that way at Spider. In fact, we are prepared to treat you far better than the Academy of Espionage has treated you all along."
I didn't want to work for Spider. Not in the slightest. And yet Joshua had struck a nerve. Spy school had treated me badly.
so I couldn't help but ask. How so?
For starters, we'd compensate you very well financially. While your friends from spy school will be struggling to make ends meet on measly government salaries, you'll soon make millions with us, tax-free.